Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down real low. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
Want to stay up to date on the biggest stories in pop culture and entertainment? Then be sure to check out the TMZ podcast. I'm Charlie Cotton from TMZ, the TV show, and every day I'll sit down with a member of our news team to give exclusive breakdowns of the day's most talked about headlines, stories we break, and the stories you care about. So check out the TMZ podcast, Monday through Friday, and the other podcasts from the TMZ audio network like Last Days and TMZ Verified, available on all podcast platforms.
Hello and welcome to yet another bonus episode of There Will Be Dungeons, a Q&A episode. We did two in January of 2021, and this is the second of those two. So we hope you enjoy it, and glad that you submitted more questions so that we could answer them more and give you more goodness in the month of January. We'll be back at it next month as well, and when we do that, we'll need your questions, so keep those coming. therewillbedungeons@gmail.com, therewillbedungeons@gmail.com, or just go to the site. There's a questionnaire right on the page. You don't have to do anything else. Just go to therewillbedungeons.com, fill it out, hit submit, and boom, more questions are to be had. And sometimes we get them on Twitter, whatever, wherever. Just do it all, and we'll do them right here on the show. All right, let's hand the keys over to Kristen, who will take us on a journey today with some questions you've had about our latest campaign. Kristen, take it away.
All right, first question today. Have you all thought about other systems for future campaigns, such as Star Wars, Star Trek, Sixth Gun, The Expanse, Altered Carbon?
Oh my gosh. Wait a minute. Is he saying that there are there... So if you were going to do an Expanse thing, is there a system for The Expanse, or would you use... Is he just saying like one of those places as a backdrop and then using some existing, you know, game rule set for it? Is that... I assume that's probably what he means.
I don't know if there is one. There could be.
There might be.
Game rules for almost everything. I guess they're on a show that did a Firefly rule set. Yeah. And so there could be.
Mm-hmm. There is an Expanse role-playing game. It is, it's done by Green Ronin. The Firefly system, though, is really weird because it was made, I believe, before the movie came out. And you play as the characters in the show. Like, there is no rules to play your own characters in Firefly.
Oh, interesting. So usually what I would think of this is, like, you take something like Starfinder or Pathfinder, depending on, you know, if you're going fantasy, you go Pathfinder, you're doing sci-fi, you're doing Starfinder, and then you just apply those rules to your favorite world. It seems like that would work because those worlds, like, you know, I don't know, The Expanse is kind of a hard one because The Expanse literally started as a role-playing game that those guys were building before they decided to branch the story out and do something with it. And then those books happen, and then the television show happened. So its origins was as a tabletop RPG experience that they were custom making. But for most things, like if you were, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good example. I just watched the movie Sunshine, which is this great Danny Boyle movie from 2007 about restarting the sun because the Earth's going to die in a solar winter. And everybody's got to fly way out there and do it. And it's got this great cast. It's a really good movie. Anyway, like that, for example, you could take and say, all right, we're going to use the Starfinder rules and we're going to make our own characters. And our job is to go restart the sun or whatever. Like, I feel like you could do that with just about anything, right?
I think Dr. Tolbert here is asking particularly about other systems, as in the official systems, like Star Wars Edge of the Empire is a system. That would be a lot of fun, but I don't... The weird thing about other systems is I feel like we'd have to match the tone of those movies or shows, but we'd be coming to it with our own There Will Be Dungeons twist, which would make it feel like There Will Be Dungeons again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, you know...
I also think there's something to be said about... Because I've always been... I was very close to doing a Star Wars tabletop campaign. I had characters and so ready to go, and it just never took off. And as a result, you know, it's always been a pull. And I just think for what we're trying to accomplish with this like online format and all of that, there is a level of ease that the tools we have provide that does get a little trickier as soon as you want to go to a different setting. I mean, we're kind of spoiled by the way some of these things work. Not to say that there aren't things out there that do it, but I also think Kyle has a good point where, you know, you do thematically, if you're going to do Star Wars, you know, you want to get a group of rebels or Imperials, or, you know, you want to try and tie into that movie. But how long is it before we start talking about Wookiee dicks and what those look like?
First episode.
First 5 minutes, first episode. Well, yeah.
Wookiee dick. What do you mean? My name is Wookiee dick. Wookiee dick.
Snake Island, only Wookiee dick.
Well, right. These are all valid issues, but there's also a production issue. Like, let's say we decided to do the Star Wars system for a run of something. We are suddenly getting quite banned and muted on Twitch in a way that is impossible to do anything. Because if we want to recreate that world, we're going to want to use the sounds and the music and the atmosphere of Star Wars. And Disney's crazy protective of that stuff, so they don't really let you do it. It's great for around a table when it's just you and your friends in your basement. But when it's you trying to do a quote unquote, you know, entertaining production, you severely limit yourself because the Star Wars assets are really, really tough to use without getting in trouble.
That brings up a good point, too, because I know with Star Wars, at least there's a heavy use of a new type of die system that you really need visually to kind of see how the story is affected. Mm-hmm. It really adds a lot to the game itself. So mechanics alone could really cause another level of challenge to making it a more audio verbal, whereas D&D is group storytelling.
Yeah. By the way, Kristen, you put the link to the Expanse system thing in there, the game. And it's funny because James S.A. Corey, the author of the books, is actually two people, not one dude.
Wait, and, really?
Yeah. So it's these two guys who were avid tabletop players and built this story, this world that became the Expanse. And then what it looks like to me, I'm just reading some of these credits and stuff, is they basically probably had an okay system, but it was more like, hey, we're going to play with each other and this is going to be fun and friends are screwing around. But they probably smartly handed it off to a bunch of really smart game designers, because some of these names are jumping out at me as people on other systems, and they built it again, which is probably the right thing to do based on what they did. But yeah, a lot of people don't know that. That's two dudes. It's a pseudonym and they write those books together and it ain't one guy.
That's badass.
Fun fact. Yeah.
Next question. Who should I approach to talk about a project that I have in mind for an adult coloring book based on There Will Be Dungeons? I don't think they mean mature adult, but more, you know, like highly detailed and stuff.
Interesting. I mean, I don't know who you talk to. It depends on what you mean by talk to them about it. Like, do you have a project you want to see become a publishable, sellable thing? Or are you just saying, I got a funny idea, I want to do like a fan thing? You can do that without anyone's permission. You can do that. That's fine. But if you're going to make something you want to kickstart and like sell or whatever, we'd have to probably talk. But I'd also need to know more what he means by adult.
I assume like meditative.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I would assume too. But I have learned never to assume, because sometimes people want weird stuff and who knows. But my guess is JP's talking about the meditative style, and I don't know, that could be fun. Send me an email. We'll throw it around the group and see what the heck you're talking about. But again, define adult will be the first thing on our agenda. And once we've done that, we'll figure it out.
I wanted to capture the moment that Nash kicked a penis under him.
That's the bonus content.
Can it be both adult and content as well as adult and meditation? Penis and meditation? It's fine. Yeah, just let us know, JP. I'm curious what you mean.
Awesome. Next question. Has there been any discussion of bringing someone in to participate in the new campaign? I think it's off to a good start, but I feel like it's missing a voice.
Well, we knew this would be a thing, right? Like this feeling of, you know, while Bo's taking his sabbatical, that we would feel the missing voice, especially because that's what people are used to. You're used to having, you know, four players, one DM, and we've changed that. And so I knew that some people would feel that way, which if you were somebody coming to this campaign fresh and this is all you've heard, you're not even thinking twice about it. So that's a balance we have to figure out. But we have talked about this, you know, what guest could come on or when would they or how long would it be or when Bo brings a character in, which is always on the table and his chair is always open. Just a matter of him saying, hey, Sunday night, I want to show up. And we'd say, all right, cool. And Bo's character would integrate into the story. So I still think we're, you know, our heads are still like, yeah, we're ready to do that. And if the other thing makes sense, we're absolutely willing to do that. But there's just nobody who jumps out. We're like, oh, we got to get so-and-so as a regular forever and always. Like, I just, that name hasn't risen in anyone's consciousness as far as I know.
Yeah, the world is made, there will be dungeons, is almost the influence for the world, that there will be missions. And as you've seen, the world is so full of various adventures where they could easily be like, and the group here, we're assigning you a wizard for today. Take this wizard with you. It's important. They need to open X door. Mm-hmm. Or even Veggie Sticks today could have been played by a guest if need be.
Right.
It's more finding that footing, maybe getting to a rank in the guild where that sort of stuff would happen story-wise. But yeah, as Scott said, that like we jump at the people we jump at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's also pretty early in the story to even start considering a regular because our characters are still very new and the story is just starting getting going. So I think once that footing is really found, then it's a lot easier to open the door to that kind of stuff because the improv is a lot easier and it's like stepping into a familiar skin when you step into that character. But that takes time and adventures together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said. John, anything to add to that?
I think that's all spot on.
Thumbs up from John.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, just a big thumbs up on this audio podcast.
Right on.
Yeah.
Next question. Do you guys plan your next move between turns, research spells or special features, or do you wait to make decisions when it's your turn and simply enjoy the story as it's progressing?
I'm a chronic overthinker. I'm thinking about my next move from the moment I've said that's my turn.
Yeah, you're good at that. One of the things I struggle with, or I did in Nash time, was I would do something and then go, all right, look at that. I did it. Okay, now we're gonna do some frame switching here. We're going to show Bo's face, and then we're going to listen to Kyle's response as Varel, and then Scott, it's your turn. Oh, shit. I haven't thought about what I want to do next. Like, that was kind of a problem that I needed to try to pull myself out of. So I've made a concerted effort with this character, with Crandall, to do more advanced thinking from turn to turn, like, or even just from the inception of the character, thinking about some of the stuff that clerics do, thinking about that stuff way ahead and what scenarios I would do this in and what I would do that in, like a lot more thinking goes into it than it does with Nash, I'll admit, because with Nash it's a little more reactive, which I don't think there's a rule either way, but you know, I don't know, I'm trying to be a little bit more like, all right, well, if John did this, then it's probably smart for me to be doing this, and I start thinking about that two moves before it even gets to me, and you know, that feels good to me. How about you, Kristen? What do you do?
Depends on the character. So for Grinkeeper, a lot of it is forward thinking, but because she's the frontline paladin, she wants to mostly set up the battlefield so that it's all around her. Mm-hmm. So one turn ahead is when she'll start planning the next move.
Yeah, I think for me, it's always difficult to go off of, you know, what does the person who likes playing XCOM, like, what is that voice? What is the voice of, this is what my character would do? And what is the voice of, you know, reacting kind of in the moment? And they're kind of at odds with each other to some degree, because I do sit there and I do analyze and I go, okay, well, if Scott moves here and he does this, then I'd move here, I do this, then we can set this up, you know, and I get to those levels, but I do try to make it honest. I don't try to do anything that doesn't seem unreasonable for the character or act outside of what they might know or do. I try to keep it at least somewhat grounded and reactionary. Most of the time I get surprised by what you know, my allies do anyway. And it's like, oh, they're not going to do that. So, you know, I'm shifting it when it comes to my turn anyway.
Mm. Yeah.
But sense. I also played a dumb character in Serious Business and I still overthought my move. So I was going to say maybe the secret is I just need to play dumb characters instead of smart ones, but I still do it.
Kyle, is it any different for you as the one who needs to puppet these NPCs and creatures and stuff? Do you have, you know, how far ahead are you thinking about what they're doing other than, you know, major story points, obviously, but moment to moment combat?
Yeah, it's a lot harder with like a straight up villain that you're trying to keep a pace on and has been built up over time. When it comes to random critters, which is what we've mostly been fighting, or ghosts, my job is just to die as spectacularly as possible and as quick as possible. So I want to enter positions that are interesting for you guys. Maybe I do something that would allow you to execute a certain move or mess with your positions. So we're not all just standing there, you know, Warcraft 3, don't know how to play. So the knights are hitting the orcs and they go ding, ding, ding till one falls. I do appreciate when everyone speeds their turn along by pre-planning, but I'm in that exact XCOM situation too, where you're like, oh yeah, now I got this. And then seven chrysalis whatevers from XCOM jump over the wall and you're like, well, crud, now I'm going to spend here 5 minutes thinking, if not 30 minutes, how I can get out of this.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I hope that answers the question. It's going to vary on, I think the answer is it varies on player and it also varies on character and it also may vary on experience.
But your DMs appreciate when you pre-plan.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, with these next questions, we're kind of going to be stepping back a little bit into before the extended break that we had. And so this is both for the players and their characters, or Wastes characters, favorite Thanksgiving side dish.
For Stanley, it's food. It's like whatever you put in front of him. I've always loved this aspect. It's always been my favorite, like, weird frustration, but also kind of inside joke in my own head that we've never really called out, which is they're from the wasteland. They like live day to day on whatever they can find and scavenge together. And so we go to like demon manors and stuff and they're like, what would you like to drink? And it's like, Stanley always ordered water because it was like, you can't find water anywhere. It's a rare commodity. He's never had wine. He's never had beer. Like he's struggled for his entire life. Like anybody else, he likes water and food that is readily available and probably not crawling through the dirt when he goes to eat it. So his favorite Thanksgiving side dish is one, what's Thanksgiving, and two, food.
Wow. Now it's John's favorite side dish.
Yeah.
Mine is my grandma makes homemade cranberry sauce.
Oh man.
And it is like, I'm not a fan of cranberry sauce. I typically just don't like it. But it is the best thing I've ever had. Mm. And I've told people this. My wife is the same way. She said, I don't like cranberry sauce. I said, you got to try it. And she said, I'll try it because your grandma made it. You know, a real courtesy. And we currently have 4 additional bottles of it that we requested because she can't stop eating it. Mm. And it is the one thing that during this pregnancy, she was just like, get me a bottle of that cranberry
sauce. No way.
She ate the whole thing in one sitting. She's probably not happy I just told that story. But she did. She just sat down and ate the whole thing. It's very good.
Mm. For Nash, I don't know. He'll eat anything. So, and even if it's been
in the pocket.
Whatever's in his pocket. Like, for real. Like, he doesn't discriminate, but in a different way than Stanley. He just doesn't. You know, if it's got any nutritional value, and if it makes him violently ill because it's too old or whatever, he'll still try it. He doesn't care. Which is totally opposite of me, by the way. I would never do that in my real life. My favorite side dish is like the most boring thing ever. It's like, I just like good stuffing. Like, I don't care who makes it or what it's made.
Yeah,
stuffing's pretty darn good.
I'll even take freaking stovetop boxed garbage out of the grocery store. I'll eat that. Like right now, I'd eat a whole plate of that if you gave it to me. Sounds great.
Yeah, but do you ever do what my dad would do, which is go to the deli, get sliced turkey from sandwiches, buy instant gravy, and call that Thanksgiving?
No. No, but that, I mean, I don't know. There's something about that relates. I relate to that somehow. I don't know what it is.
It. Yeah, it's endearing. It is. Like, we didn't complain. And granted, that wasn't Thanksgiving. He just called it Thanksgiving.
Right.
And, you know, it wasn't officially the date or anything. He just really liked that instant meal.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why that to me sounds fine. It sure does, though. I don't have a problem with it, which is kind of Nash-like anyway. But, yeah, I don't have a... I'm not picky about it. Varel, what do you demand at the side of your lizard folk feast?
I think if we all ended up at a Thanksgiving banquet, Varel's, I'd go straight for the gravy boat and drink it. I'd pour it into my mouth.
Wow.
Down in one.
There you go.
Comment how efficient of a vessel it was for imbibing.
There you go.
Oh, the boat? Yeah.
Yeah, the boat.
Stanley and then wonder would be why a the boat is kept... guy. If he was at a Thanksgiving dinner, he would definitely be like, oh, turducken. He doesn't know what it is, but if he did, that would be it.
Yeah. There you go. How about you, Kristen?
Oh, let's see. Well, me personally, biscuits. I love biscuits.
Gravy covered biscuits.
Yeah, with some butter on it too. I mean, just make it soppy. So good. Yeah. But Hope, if she were to sit down,
it'd have to be burnt. Thanksgiving. Right? It'd be on fire and or burnt.
Mm-hmm. I think she'd like mashed potatoes.
I love it.
I think it would be a delectable treat because they usually have it. Usually has milk and it's got salt and pepper in it. Mm-hmm. It's a really cool side.
Yeah, nobody doesn't like a good mashed potatoes. Like if they say that, they're lying because they're amazing. Yeah. I'm with you. I'm with Hope on that.
Next question. This came in when Tasha's Cauldron was released with all of the new subclass options and artificer class added to the new D&D tome. Are any of you looking at subtle or not so subtle changes to your class? Multiclassing, and then the artificer armor looks like it could open some potions, some options for Hope if she decides to cut her arm off again. I don't know about that, but I will say I did run into the Jedi that they put in there. Mm-hmm. You can become force sensitive, but in the D&D world.
Yeah, basically, yeah. That's it. Yeah, I haven't really looked into that stuff too much. Like,
there's some really cool stuff. Yeah. And multiclassing for Stanley ended when he met the god that he was potentially going to meet if he was going to become a cleric and then went,
nope,
that's over. That dream died. But I will say for the new characters, I believe my subclass is going to come from Tasha's. So if you're excited about the new stuff that was in that book, I think that's where my subclass is coming from.
Interesting.
Wait, so you would have to get that subclass to level 3 though, right?
Yes. So if Ko survives and we level up.
Oh, I see. I thought you were talking about Stanley. I'm like, wow, that's a lot of milestones to burn to get a multi-class going on.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking about for Ko, not for Stanley. Stanley's pretty set. Maybe he takes the level in Rogue because the last levels of Bard is boring.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't given it much thought.
What about Varel?
Gosh, the end of Barbarian is not the most thrilling thing, but I want my ability score improvements. And my final level 20 is that I get a strength of +4 and my con is increased by 4 as well. So it's not thrilling, but it's everything I need.
And that's all.
Fair enough.
If you get what you need, it is truly all you need. That's how I look at it.
Mm-hmm. And for you, Nash, was Nash at all worried that it seemed that all the group's quests were leading them to the solar mines?
it did seem like Bo was steering that direction. And I hope one day we finally get to see it and do it in some way. But it is fine. Like the one thing you don't like, well, I can't speak for everybody else, but the one thing I didn't want to see happen, and not that it was happening, but you're always a little nervous about this concept that your character would take front and center. Cause I never want that. I don't want Nash to be the focus of anything. Cause mainly cause he's just such an idiot, but also I don't know why it bothers me. I don't want to be the focus of anything. Now, whether Bo had plans for that or not, I don't know. And we'd certainly go along with whatever, but every time something would happen, like time bar for multiple Nashes or a giant Nash head in the middle of space and like these sorts of things, that all was leading me to think that all paths led to some gnarly Nash business, but we're not going to know for a little bit of time anyway what that was all going to be. I don't know if that answers the question very well, but basically, I don't know. I don't think Bo knew this or knows this, but I don't like the idea of my character could have been like titular for everyone. That would really bum me out. Except to rub it in Stanley's face, and I don't mean John's face, but Stanley's face, because Stanley and Nash, you know, with the way they work together, that would be pretty funny if Stanley's entire world revolved around some kind of Nash business. That would just crack me up. So maybe it would work. I don't know how it would go.
It would go either way.
Yeah.
Just keep on trucking. How does Stanley feel with the fact that he's the only one left with the principal's deal?
Sad, which is appropriate, because Stanley's the sad one of the group. So, you know, it's on brand for him. He's the one who feels like he's always punching up. So keep on punching up, Stanley.
Yeah, never punch down. Always up.
Yeah.
For Varel, since he has met an actual god who claimed Grosjeal was dangerous and that the one Grosjeal killed is the reason all these events were set in motion, did that worry Varel in the slightest?
Yes. It would have been a nice story beat of sorts for Varel and Grosjeal to part ways there at the White Tower permanently, but then it ended up back on me. And I haven't really known how to deal with that. I mean, luckily, the Eye of Grosjeal is just like, hey, let's kick some butt. And I'm like, yeah, no, I was planning to kick that thing's butt. We're cool. Where that's going to come to a point or when I would disagree with him, that's what I'm nervous about. Because I think he just leaves. But, you know, knowing Bo, like, nobody just leaves and never comes back.
No, totally. And then continuing on that, combined with the knowledge that the voice healed Grosjeal and called him old friend, is there any worry Grosjeal might be more evil than Varel initially thought?
Yeah, that was disconcerting for sure. I don't know what to do with that information because Varel wouldn't understand the cosmic workings of why those two know each other, why that matters. I mean, he just wants to fight the biggest thing he can and continue to gain glory. Though I do like, Chris and I were actually talking the other night about what we were going to do with our characters, because now we're being hunted by Mastermind. And I think I'm just going to let that ride. You know, if he sends assassins after me, all the better. That's more people to beat up, more people to challenge me. But I don't think we're going to confront that beast. Just let it happen in the background. But Grosjeal, I have no idea. I have no idea where that's going and what Varel would do about it.
What's the group's thoughts on gods now that they've all met the Fishbird?
They're dumb.
The Fishbird. Yeah, the Fishbird leaves a sour taste in your god mouth. But I don't know. I'm kind of enjoying this Paylor business. And given that, you know, this current run is such a... It's a little more adherent to the world of D&D and not like just, you know, us taking concepts and moving them into the wasteland. It's fun to explore that within the place it was meant to be or that it was created for. So not haven't done much with it yet, but I'm having fun with that. But overall, gods are dumb. They're like Greek gods. They're all just kind of dicks.
Yeah.
In their own way.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying Paylor though?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I say, I haven't done enough to sort of suss out how that relationship really is or should be, or if you know, if it's all hunky dory or not. Like, I don't know, some of that's going to come with the story and with time, but yeah, I enjoy that stuff. Enjoy it a lot, but generally speaking, if I was to enter the world, let's say tomorrow the whole world of D&D became a real place and we could all just insert ourselves in it and live our lives there, I would be pretty roguish and anti alignment with any deity or anyone telling me what to do. I'm at a stage in my life where I have way less poops to give than I used to have. And so anybody in authority would probably just get the finger from me. Like that'd be me.
Well, I guess if we could have any pantheon, which pantheon would you guys want in the D&D game?
Oh my gosh. I have no idea. What would you guys say?
I'd probably go with Greek just because it's the one that I like. They're all super dicks. Like Scott said, they're bad. There's something to be said about they're bad, but they're not Fishbird bad. Fishbird is just a troll. Let's be clear what the Fishbird was. Greek gods are bad, but you know, the importance is that you find the qualities in them that you need and you draw those to you.
Yeah.
And so I think that pantheon is just really fun. And it also is a pantheon that allows for a lot of explanation as to, well, they didn't help you because they were too busy throwing a big party or doing something awful to a bunch of other people at that particular time. So it's just one of those things, like it humanizes them in a way that just explains a lot of things in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Pantheon wise. Go ahead.
With Egyptian, because there's something fascinating about like, this is it. And this is the best it is. Like their afterlife in Egypt was life. You just didn't have sicknesses or crocodiles after you.
Yeah.
You just kept farming. You just kept like this. It's as good as it'll ever be. And the land will be great. And you're like, fine. That's all I know. And that's all I care about. That sounds great. What about the gods? They oversee it.
Yeah. It's the same.
You just check in every now and then. How's it going?
You just don't get Nile mosquito disease and eaten by crocs that's the difference. Yeah. It's weird. They have that. Their ideas were pretty weird. They're pretty low hanging fruit. It's like they didn't really go too far with it. I think I like, just not just to be different, but I really do like Norse mythology a lot. And even though they're all kind of dicks too, I don't know. There's something about that stuff that I really like. There's a adherence to glory, and I don't know. That stuff's fun. Maybe more the way Mad Max Fury Road does it, which is kind of a spin on that. But just the whole shiny and chrome before the gates of Valhalla stuff, and you know, a man god named Immortan Joe is the one that ensures your path to make it there, and this, you know, spraying your face with spray paint. There's like this, there's a certain devotion level there that always gets me, and so I would take some version of that, which is a lot like the you know, their stuff in general. And the Roman gods are just Greek god ripoffs anyway, so those are lame. Like, hey, I'm Jupiter. Really, I'm Zeus. Same thing. Big deal. Don't they both have Apollos, I think? Or am I thinking of something else? I might be thinking of something else, but those two pantheons are dumb. I mean, they're dumb compared to each other. It's just half a dozen of one and six of the other.
Well, great topic. Answers, everyone, this time.
Well done.
That's pretty much it.
That's it for this week, everybody. And that means that's it for this month. That means that next time we'll be doing this, it'll be with you again in a month. And again, if you want to be a part of this and you want to get your stuff in here, you need to be sending in your questions. It doesn't exist without them. So thanks for your support, but then also send us your questions. We need to know how you're feeling, what you think. And we always get plenty, but it's never hurts to knock on your door a bunch and tell you, please send more. So send them in. Go to therewillbedungeons.com. Many ways to send them. Super simple. And that'll be it for us for next month. Until next month. From me, from Kyle, from Kristen, and from John. We'll see you then.